Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisory firm. Price Financial Group has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investment and retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations may vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial program with a certified financial planner, estate planning attorney, and a certified public accountant to answer your questions for free. Got a tough estate, tax, or financial problem keeping you up at night? You can call the show right now at 503-222-9700. That's 503-222-9700. Long distance and podcast listeners can call toll free at 800-344-5836. Coming to you live from Portland, Oregon, and broadcast on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
We do Investing Simplified.
And welcome into Investing Simplified. However you're listening, thanks for making us a part of your day. I'm Bo Caldwell, CEO of Price Financial Group. We've got Matt May, the CIO, in here with me again.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, everybody. If you're listening to us on the radio, we really appreciate it. But if you do miss us on the radio, we do replay the show, as a reminder, on podcast. You can get that by either visiting our website, pfgwm.com, or by going to investingsimplifiedradio.com. You can also get it wherever you download your podcasts. If you are downloading our podcast, we really appreciate if you would give it a like, give it a rating. That helps us get the podcast out there and get the information out there that everyone, you know, so badly needs. I want to say I really appreciate you sending in your questions via investingsimplifiedradio.com and sending in those questions via the askbo@pfgwm.com email, because we really want to bring you the content that you want to know, the questions that have been keeping you up at night. To let you know, Taylor Cattell's not going to be on the show with us today, but she will be back next week, and I am hopeful that Kevin Stege, the CPA extraordinaire, a.k.a. the tax animal, will also be back. We do have Steve Anderson, the property tax guru, who we've had on the show, coming on. He helps go to bat for you if you think you're overpaying in property taxes. He'll be coming on here in a couple of weeks, as well as we have Brian Harrington, our PERS expert, coming on here in a couple of weeks. So if you have questions about those items, please give us a shout. Send that question to investingsimplifiedradio.com or askbo@pfgwm.com. We really appreciate it. So, Matt, one of the questions that came in, and we didn't get to talk about it last week, even though it came in last week, was about HSAs.
Okay.
And I know you're a big fan of HSAs. We've talked about them before. And the question is, for someone who is A, retired, so no income, earned income for the year, but not yet old enough to sign up for Medicare, if they obtain a high deductible health plan for that particular situation, does it make sense for that person to open an HSA and contribute dollars to an HSA? So what are your thoughts? So they did. What are we, like the coffee talk lady, right?
So
discuss.
Yeah, HSAs from the top down are one of the most appealing investment strategies if the HSA the plan allows you to invest dollars. Typically what we see is that once the account balance reaches $1,000, they let you invest that money. So the beautiful thing about HSAs, as a recap, the money goes in pre-tax, meaning you get a deduction for that, and then those dollars grow tax-free as long as you use them for their specified purpose, which is healthcare needs. And it's within the HSA plan, it'll specify exactly which costs qualify. So it has to be qualified expenses. So goes in pre-tax, meaning you get a deduction. It could potentially grow if the HSA plan allows those assets to be invested at specific dollar amounts or above those dollar amounts. And then as long as you use them for the healthcare costs specified, they come out tax-free. It's the only investment vehicle out there that gives you a tax deduction going in and tax-free coming out.
So that's a big key, right? When people think about the difference between utilizing a traditional IRA or a traditional 401k versus a Roth, they always think about, well, do I get the tax deduction now or do I get to take it out tax-free later? And HSA, folks, if you didn't hear Matt just say that, it goes in as a tax deduction now, comes out tax-free later as long as you use it for those prescribed medical costs. So what a lot of people call it, you know, a lot of, you know, you'll hear it called a healthcare IRA, right? Because you're going to have medical costs. I mean, that's one of the things we can all agree on.
Most likely, yes.
There's going to be costs for, you know, medical issues as you age. And as long as you, like you said, use it for those medical costs, it comes out tax-free.
Right. And HSA technically stands for health savings account.
That's a good point.
One thing I would ask you, kick this back over to you, sure. Bo, from an income perspective, if there is no earned income, are you still allowed to contribute to an HSA?
You know, that's a good question. I believe so. I don't know. I will look it up in the break and we'll find out for sure. We'll get back to find out if the HSA requirement for depositing, couldn't find that word, the HSA requirement for depositing, it means that you have to have in income. I think the only real issue with the HSA is that you have to have a high deductible plan, mm-hmm. which means that you have to have, at least in 2019, it was a $1,400 deductible for an individual or a $2,800 deductible for a family. So it has to be that quote unquote high deductible plan. But if you're getting your plan set up, whether that's with the Kaiser or Providence or Moda or Blue Cross, whoever, you can ask, is this a high deductible plan and does it qualify for an HSA? And the big thing you mentioned, which a lot of people don't know, is you have to get that HSA set up somewhere where they let you do HSAs. But a lot of credit unions have HSA accounts. I don't know that they let you invest it, but you can talk to your investment advisor or your broker that you use. And a lot of times they have HSA accounts available. Like you said, if you get to a certain amount that are investable. And then you're limited on your contributions. You can't put, you know, $25,000 in a year, you know, and try to skirt the system.
Right.
But you can put in significant amounts of money, and over time, it really adds up. If that's an option at your work, too, it's really worth exploring as well, because that's a great way to save extra money. If you're looking to put more money away for retirement, you can actually use this for retirement, right? Because the strategy would be, hey, I'm going to use my IRA money or my 401k money for living expenses and use the HSA for medical expenses, right?
I mean, right. It really covers that gap. Some people don't want to retire at 65. What if you wanted to retire at 60 and, you know, Medicare doesn't kick in till 65? Right. You want to be able to cover those health expenses and maybe mm-hmm. not necessarily rob the 401k or the IRA mm-hmm. for living needs. The HSA for those qualified, specified expenses can really cover the gap there.
Yeah, and it really, it's tax beneficial. It makes a lot of sense. So I would say to that particular listener, I would say, yeah, it definitely does make sense to use that HSA. Now, it doesn't reduce, in this person's case, he doesn't have earned income, or she, I shouldn't say he or she doesn't have earned income, but you can still put the money in. You know, and it's, you know, it's deductible against your earned income. Okay, no earned income, that's fine. But it could still grow tax deferred and it comes out tax free, right? So it can still make sense if you're looking to save extra money in that deferred and or tax free bucket.
Yep, absolutely. And we want to definitely check that that requirement. If you have to have earned income to be able to contribute, we'll check on that.
And we'll get back to you after the break to make sure about the HSA requirement. But that's a really good question. You know, a lot of people have that question. What, you know, HSAs? How can we use them? What
are I they love them. For? Of course, you know, you want to make sure that it fits within your strategy for your investment and financial planning needs. It's hard to say that something that comes out tax free would be bad, and also goes in tax deductible would be bad, and the dollar amounts are lower, so it should be reasonable. Again, kind of tying into what we talked about last week, there is a priority for your dollars as they come into the household. Where HSAs fit, I would, you know, certainly like to see the free money, like the 401k match, hit first. If we need to put dollars to work, that's free money. HSAs, though, they offer a really powerful benefit.
Yeah, no, it's a really good arrow in your quiver or tool in your tool chest, whatever silly analogy you want to be using. So I think in answer to that question, I think we definitely want to be utilizing that HSA if they have that extra, if they have those extra dollars and are able to contribute it, like you said. So, you know, if you have a question like that particular listener, and it's about an HSA, it's about a financial product, something to do with your finances, with your estate planning, with your taxes, make sure you send it in to us at askbo@pfgwm.com or visit investingsimplifiedradio.com and send it in there. I want to apologize as well. I learned too late after we had, you know, broadcast last week that there was some technical difficulties. So if you're listening this week and we had some technical difficulties on the radio, so we do appreciate you sticking with us and we are powering through. We are powerless to those technical difficulties, as you might imagine. So we're doing our best to bring you that content. So we're going to take a break here, and then we're going to come back, talk more about the priorities of investing. Like Matt said, we want to talk about economic updates, what we see looking out there in the market, and talk about a couple other items that have been top of mind for us, and hopefully cover some questions from listeners. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you're just now joining us, thanks for tuning in. If you've been with us so far today, we really appreciate you sticking with us. And I'm Bo Caldwell here with Matt May with Price Financial Group. And Matt, you know, one of your favorite topics that we've been talking about getting on the radio for quite a while, you know, we like to call it the priorities of investing. And, you know, basically, folks, when you're talking about priorities of investing, the reason we call it that is when you have a dollar that you earn that comes into your household, we get that question a lot. Where should I do? What should I do with this dollar that's coming in? And I realize that that's an exaggeration. It's only $1. But the idea is, what should we do with that first dollar? So, Matt, what do you look at for the first place that we should be putting a dollar?
Yeah, I love this simple 7-step kind of strategy for money that comes into the household. The first step that you want to make sure you absolutely 100% of the time do is get your free money. And by that, I mean, hopefully you have a retirement plan, a company retirement plan that matches your contributions. If you do, whatever the match that they give you is, you want to make sure that you hit that 100%. Sometimes it's dollar for dollar up to 3% or 4% of your contributions. Sometimes it gets a little more weird, like they'll match 100% of the first 4% and then 50% of the next 2%. So you really got to put in 6%, and that equates to a 5% match. Still, you got to put in the 6 to make sure you get your full 5% match. Free money going in day one, nobody can touch that. Nobody can beat that. Except maybe Vegas, but the risk is way too high.
Well, it's free money that you can't get back, right? I've talked to folks about the concept of, you know, it's just the basic concept of compound interest. You know, the earlier you get the money in there, the better it can do compounding, even if you're just earning, you know, what, 0.5% right now at the bank. But the idea is the earlier you can put it in there, and it's free money. So that, folks, that's, I talk to so many people that say, hey, I can't afford to hit that match. I can't put 5% or 10% of my you know, earnings away, and I would argue you can't afford not to, right? I
mean, absolutely. If you can't afford that now, fast forward to your retirement, and how does that look? You can't, maybe you don't want to work anymore or physically are unable to work now, and you have to maybe perhaps rely on whatever you were able to sock away, and then Social Security, likely having to take Social Security early, which diminishes your benefit. It's just a negative feedback loop.
Right. Yeah. Just it compounds the wrong way on each other.
Yep,
right.
Yep.
And the idea that if you can't, and I don't want to, poo-poo the idea of that you can't just afford to take 5% less than what you're bringing home now. But I would encourage you, if you're not getting to the match, at least start adding 1% and then see how it feels. And then the next month, put 1% more in, get to the match, have a goal of getting to that match over time, at least. Right.
Right. And it can be a difficult conversation with some. It's like, well, I don't want to give this up and I don't want to give that up. I totally understand. But if we see, unfortunately, the consequences of these decisions decades down the road when we're working with, 60-year-old clients or 65-year-old clients that just are just done working for whatever reason, mentally, physically. I mean,
it's work, can't do it anymore. Yeah.
If you really enjoy it, okay, sure, cool.
Right.
And maybe you just want to keep working, but some people just can't anymore. And that if they didn't make these decisions way back in their working careers, it really can be an issue. So definitely first step, get your free money and find a way. Mm-hmm. If you have to, 5 or 6%, some plans are even more generous. I've seen ones that are like, you can match up to 15%.
I'm like, wow,
15%. No way. Show it to me. And it's like, they pull out their earning statement. There it is. 15% match. I'm like, wow, that is massive.
Yeah. You better be taking advantage of that. Cause that's insane amount of money that they're putting in for free. And if you don't know what they match and you don't know if you're hitting it, give your HR department a call. Make sure that because they'll be able to tell you, because you want to get that match. Okay, so if I've hit that match, right? So I've got that match that has come in, which is great. Okay, so now I have extra money that I need to be putting away. What should I do? What should I be doing next?
The next step definitely would be emergency savings. We would say just a bare minimum 6 months, but we would prefer to see 1 year worth of spending in an emergency savings account. And unfortunately, with this one, you're in a bucket that is paying very, very low interest, most likely. We talked about some other alternatives recently about how to get a little more juice for those really safe funds, checking savings, those kinds of things, or high interest savings accounts. But emergency savings, especially now, we saw what happened February, March, when the whole economy just tanked.
Yeah.
Millions and millions of people a week were filing for unemployment.
Yeah.
And, okay, you've got the unemployment benefit and such, and sometimes it was delayed. Some people are just now getting their funds, and that's a different story. But at least if you have that 6 to 12 months worth of emergency savings, you never want to see it being depleted. You never want to be experiencing an unemployment situation. But if you don't have it, where do people normally turn to? That's their retirement accounts.
Right.
And now if you're not 59 and a half, you're subject to, of course, tax on the pre-tax stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely going to get taxed on that. And if you're not 59 and a half and it's not a qualified withdrawal, it's another tack on a 10% penalty.
Yeah, which is an excise tax. So just you're paying way more in taxes. And the reason people ask a lot why we say 6 months to a year, and it's, it's expenses, it's, basic living expenses, because on average, it takes about 6 months to find a new job.
Mm-hmm.
If you need to find a new gig, if you have this enforced furlough or enforced retirement. And unfortunately, that's been happening pretty commonly. And it may happen, again, coming up soon, depending on if we can get back to, back to humming like we were before. But if we get a resurgence of COVID, if we get, anything coming out of the federal government that they haven't funded these unemployment, but all these things add up to possibilities of people losing their jobs for whatever reason. So we want to make sure you have that emergency fund, set up for emergencies, right? So if something comes up, you don't have to go into $20,000 worth of credit card debt or
credit cards or retirement accounts. But tapping into those in emergencies is, that's rough to see.
Yeah, it's no fun.
So the third step is, and I would say the third and the second are almost either interchangeable or combined.
Sure.
That one would be protection.
Okay.
And by protection, I mean cover yourself with life insurance. If you're, there are cases like the young single folks that aren't married. If, something unfortunately happened to them, they don't have a ton of debt. They don't have a spouse that relies on their income. There's no big house payment. Maybe we don't need that step. But for those that are married, and it was especially for the main earners,
mm-hmm.
whatever, you know, whoever is the main earner, or even if you have two incomes, you want to be able to replace that income if something happens, right?
Right. Well,
that's the big key.
If you got kids that are young, right, they're going to be under the household. And even if you're the main earner and you say, well, I need to have protection for me if something happens to me, but not my spouse, you know, they stay home, you know, they're managing the kids. And I would argue that they've been severely underpaid for their work, especially now.
Parents, they're,
but if you think about it, if your spouse that does not work now, but maybe has to go to work, right, when you pass away, so you want to have, you know, life insurance on yourself to replace your income. But if you lost your spouse who doesn't work, who's going to do that homemaking, that, you know, that child rearing, and we're not even talking about dual income spouses, because that speaks for itself, right? You need that other income. But if you have a spouse that stays home or doesn't earn income, how would it impact you if you lost that home coverage, right? You'd have to pay somebody
exactly
to come in and take over those duties. So, you know, you realize real quick how underpaid your spouse is.
Right.
So you want to have life insurance. And so people ask all the time, you know, for that, do we use permanent life insurance? Do we use term life insurance? What, you know, what are your feelings about it?
I think it really depends on the person's or the household's financial goals.
Okay.
It is, the numbers say, better than 99% of every dollar you spend on term insurance is wasted.
Right.
And we try as financial advisors to waste, or excuse me.
try to waste as little as possible.
Waste as little as possible. I wasn't done with that sentence. Thank you for filling that blank.
Sure.
So we try not to see our clients waste dollars. It is the battle here is that term insurance is certainly much, much cheaper. It's a very, very inexpensive solution to potentially a large problem.
Right.
So, and it's not just income replacement that we're looking for with life insurance. We also want to be able to cover liabilities like credit card debt, mortgage debt. The last thing you want when you've lost your spouse is not only just to lose their income. Well, of course, they're no longer with you. That's terrible. But to lose their income, and then now you have this big, massive debt payment that you're covering on your own. Mm-hmm. So you definitely want to have a solution that covers that. Maybe some negligible funeral expenses. Those are generally $10,000 to $20,000 thereabouts, roughly. Depending on your budget. I'm hoping that my wife would throw me maybe like a $25,000 party. Yeah, I think that there really could be cause for a good memorial celebration, I think.
So we need some more life insurance, is what you're saying.
I'd like to go big on that one.
Go big. It's earmarked for that. I'd like a Viking funeral.
Viking funeral, just, you know, I don't know if hit you from 100 yards out with a flaming arrow and just you float away. Just,
yeah, that would be pretty cool.
That's the way my brother wants to do it.
Right. We kid.
How do you set that up? You can't.
No.
And then the last piece for the life insurance in general is for covering potentially any educational expenses for the kids. If that's important, and say, hey, I was going to be saving for the next 10 years, something unfortunate happened to me, and I'm not going to be able to put that money away. At least I know that this potential need is covered. The kids' educational expenses are built into that coverage. So answering your question about permanent versus term life insurance, if it's affordable and it fits in the plan, I think whole life has a much, much better chance of recouping and growing your dollars tax-free, recouping your input dollars, your input premium cost. Term, 99% of the time or more, is wasted.
Right, because you don't, and the people will ask, what do you mean by that? It's because you're most likely not going to die.
Right. Numerically, the insurance companies actuarially calculate the numbers based on your age and your risk group and such. You're likely to outlive that, even for a 30-year-old to buy a 30-year policy, still 99% of the time you're going to make it to past age 60.
Or you let it lapse, and a lot of things go into that.
Yeah, a lot of stuff happens. Like, do I need this anymore? I was like, I've paid down my debts. We've saved up a bunch. Do we really need it? And then, you know, you stop paying it. But maybe that's 15 or 20 years worth of premium payments that are just
gone. Just money gone.
Nothing to show for it.
So, you know, the gist of what I'm hearing and, you know, what we talk about with life insurance and, you know, is that it's a individual situation, right? There's no right answer to what your situation is. If, you know, if you're utilizing term insurance, generally speaking, it's because, hey, I want to make sure for the next 15 years my or 20 years my family's covered, and after that I'm fine with the fact that that money went is just gone. I don't want to carry it anymore. If you're someone who can set aside a little bit more and would prefer, okay, when that 15 or 20 years is up, I'd like to have my money back and have had free insurance over that time, and you're willing to spend more out of pocket, than permanent insurance can make more sense for you. But it just depends on your situation. So if you want to look at that, if you think that's something you'd be interested in, call your insurance agent. You could call us too. Call 503-253-3000. We'll talk you through it, talk you through kind of how that works, and, you know, just basically be your sounding board for what kind and how much insurance you might need. We're happy to do that as a service for you.
Absolutely. And it's not necessarily one or the other. You can build a hybrid approach, because what generally happens, you're younger, you bought a house, you have a decent income that's going up over the years, and you want to cover your liabilities, you want to cover your income replacement. The income replacement piece, by the way, we generally look to cover about 2 to 5 years worth of income, sometimes more depending. But you know, if you take your salary, multiply it times a factor of 2 to 5, and then you've got, you know, a $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 mortgage or more, add that to it, negligible funeral expenses, maybe some educational stuff. That the big piece there is that you're paying down your liabilities.
Yeah.
So 10 years down the road, if you've lived in the same place and you've made your mortgage payments, your liabilities should be far lower. So your needs decrease over time. So that's the tough part about buying an insurance policy, is that you're covering today's needs, and those needs will likely diminish over time. So you can use a hybrid approach, maybe cover a bigger need for a shorter period of time, like buy a big policy for 10 years and then buy a smaller policy that lasts forever. So you know that those the liability, if something tragic happens in those first 10 years, hey, everything's covered. Yeah. Then at the 10-year point, your liabilities are lower, and now you've got maybe that one drops off, and then the permanent one has built up enough steam to start covering the remaining
liabilities. What you need. Yeah, and you've paid them down, or the kids are older. And like we said, there's no right answer to that amount, because the way that I like to think about it is, if I passed away, what amount would make my wife comfortable? My wife and my kids would be able to not have to drastically reduce their standard of living. They would be able to, that I would be comforted knowing that they were going to be taken care of. And that number is different for everybody. So there are times, you mentioned specifically, when your liabilities have gone down and you might be overinsured. And that's a very real possibility. So if you haven't reviewed that, if you haven't thought about it in a long time, you know, give your insurance agent a call, review it again. Give us a call. We'll review it for you free of charge, no cost, no obligation, right? So as part of your overall comprehensive plan, because insurance can be a part of it. It's not an investment, right? It's insurance. But if it's protecting you, giving you, that's why Matt said it's protection in that step three, right?
Absolutely.
So I think that's a good place to take a quick break here.
We have a few more steps left, but this is a good spot for us to step out and let some advertising happen,
right? Yeah, to step out in here, let the advertising, which is just us, right? But we can, you know, we can step out and, you know, on everybody's favorite topic, life insurance, right?
it's a very good stopping point.
It's super exciting. So we'll be right back with some more, with the other steps in how to, you know, make sure that you are following what we call that priorities of investing, or priorities of money that comes into your household. Finish those out, and then we're going to end the show today with, you know, talking about our economic outlook, what's happened this week, what we see happening going forward. So make sure you stay tuned. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Legal matters are never easy, but they are especially difficult when they involve the most important people and aspects of your life. This is Taylor Cattell, founding partner of KG Law Group. It's important to have an attorney who cares about your unique circumstances and knows how to get the outcome that is best for you. At KG Law Group, we specialize in estate planning and family law, including wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, and divorce. At KG Law Group, we provide both expertise and compassion as we guide you through the complex legal landscape. We balance knowledge of the law with exemplary client service. Whether you're reacting to a crisis or planning for the future, we are here to help. If you need legal advice, give us a call today and schedule a consultation at 503-878-8948. That's 878-8948. or visit us online at kglawgroup.com. That's kglawgroup.com, serving Oregon and Southwest Washington. KG Law Group, your family, your legacy.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening today. You know, we've been talking, Matt, about priorities of investing. And to remind people, priorities of investing means if you have dollars coming into your household, earnings-wise, investment-wise, basically money that you're making, we talk about the priorities of where should those dollars go. And would you mind giving people just kind of a recap in case they're just tuning in? Here's where we started so far. You know, what have we said so far? You know, the first couple of steps.
Yes. Quick recap. The first step is getting your 401k match. That is your contributions matched by, hopefully, an employer retirement plan. Whatever percentage they match, you definitely want to make sure that you're getting your free money there. So hit that match percentage. Step number two, emergency funds. We'd like to see about 6 to 12 months, ideally 12 months, but no less than 6 months in an emergency fund for that specific purpose. You never know when an emergency pops up and you want to have funds so you don't have to tap into retirement accounts or credit. Number three we talked about was protection. That's just plain and simply a method of using life insurance to make sure that you're covering your liabilities, income replacement, some funeral expenses, or maybe educational expenses down the road, just to make sure that if something bad happens unexpectedly, it doesn't financially just put you in a world of hurt.
Yeah, it doesn't break your financial
house. Or the family, anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
For you, it's like,
as you're gone, yeah. Okay, so after we've done, I've got my match. I'm getting my full match percentage. I've got my emergency fund is up and going. And whether or not it's up and going fully funded or I'm monthly putting money in there, right? So I've got that set. I've got the protection figured out. My family's going to be fine. You know, I've got the that insurance built up. So they're going to be fine if something happens to me. I've built it out a smart way. Where do I go next?
The next step that I like to look at is debt. Debt levels. And in prior times, I would say it was a debt percentage if your interest rate was 6% or higher.
Right.
So that number can vary and really depends on the big thing, future expected rates of return on investing.
Yeah, sure.
So the idea here is if you're paying more than 6% or more on interest, you should definitely pay that down because the long-term averages of returns should be somewhere around, hopefully, 6, 7, 8%.
Yeah.
So anything at that level or above, it's kind of a tie. So we know paying down debt will save us 6% or more, whatever our interest payment is.
Yeah.
A guaranteed savings of that percentage versus in the markets, you have to take the risk to get those level of returns. Now with the elevated markets, they have pulled back a little bit. We're at about a 9% pullback as of Thursday, September 24th. So a 9% pullback from the September 2nd high, still very, very close to the all-time highs, and our long-term returns of maybe 5-10 years, we should be expecting lower returns. So I might even adjust that percentage down to 5%.
Sure.
So any debt at 5% or more, because you'll have to probably take a significant amount of risk to average a 5% rate of return over the next 5 years.
Yeah, at least some risk, right? Which we know that there's no risk in paying down debt. And I want to clarify too, when you're talking about priorities of investing, we want, you know, in an ideal world, there would be no debt. We'd be able to have no debt. And, you know, there's just no fundamental way that, you know, regular people, you know, just, you know, normal folks will have the $400,000 in cash to buy a house,
right?
Or that they're going to just be sitting, you know, there's not no way, but it's unlikely that folks are going to have, you know, $25,000 or $30,000 for a new car if their car breaks down. Or, you know, they might, but, you know, we understand that there may be situations where you have to utilize debt smartly. But if you have these extra dollars coming in, ideally we'd be paying down those debts if they're above 4 or 5%.
4, 5, 6, somewhere around there.
Because right now, you know, I mean, I heard tell that, you know, the home interest rate on a 30-year mortgage is like 2.5 right now.
And
low. You could get in car loans, I know, are near zero, you know, if not, you know, 1%. So those are not ideal because those are short-term, you know, loans, and we like to get those paid off. But really, where we're really worried about people having debt is those credit cards that they have, personal loans from the bank, you know, different things that have these high interest rates because it's really just killing you. Student loans, you know, any of this stuff that's got these really high interest rates, you're getting eaten up by the interest.
Absolutely. And it really is kind of trying to fortune tell if you're choosing to carry a lower interest rate and in turn instead of paying off that debt, you put it to work in an investment. So that's the kind of the flip side of this step. So pay off the debt above 5-6% or potentially invest it instead. So we'll talk about that in the next step. But you know, the key there, you hit on it, 2.5%, maybe with average or slightly above average credit, you might come in at like 2.75 or 3% on a 30-year mortgage. On a 30-year time frame, if people tell me all the time, and I have a real battle, you know, I just throw it out there, like here's food for thought. This is the consideration. 2019, I made $1,000 a month extra payments on my mortgage. It's like, cool, you saved yourself 3-3.5% because, you know, rates weren't that low back then. Or maybe they have a 3.5% mortgage. The market was up 30, you know? It's like we've, instead of getting those dollars invested and making potentially 30% on a great year, it was a great year, then, you know, you've saved yourself 3%. We're guaranteed to save ourselves the interest on the debt that we paid, but the opportunity cost was monstrous. But across the longer we go and expand those time horizons to 30 years from today, the likelihood of us exceeding a 4% level of return is pretty strong.
Sure. Well, would it make sense then for if someone's looking at doing those extra payments? Because I think not just monetarily, I think from a mindset standpoint and pressure relief standpoint, paying off the mortgage earlier is really good. You know, you talk about the value that there is that is not monetarily, but would it make sense if, you know, someone that's doing $1,000 extra mortgage payments maybe takes 500 of it and puts it towards the mortgage because they're still doing that, and then do 500 of that extra payment to somewhere else?
Historically speaking, going back, let's say they have 25 years left on their mortgage, and by paying $500 more a month, it knocks it down to a 20-year payment. Historically speaking, if you've got 20 years, in any 20-year period, you put $500 a month away, by the end of the 20-year period, you can pay off whatever you owe on the mortgage and still have an enormous amount left over.
Okay.
So that enormous amount left over is your spread. That's that's your opportunity captured, not lost, to paying down the known interest. But again, this is past performance does not indicate future results.
Sure.
Is this gambling? It's calculated gambling. It's investing. Investing is not gambling. I'd say it's calculated gambling, but that's, you're placing bets across a wide array of investments if we're diversified.
Sure.
So, but, I mean, looking back 20 years, if you go across any 20-year period, the toughest stretch was 1966 to 1982. It's about a 16-year stretch where the market turned out. I mean, it was a roller coaster, but it ended up flat.
Right.
Same place that it started at in 66, it ended up in 1982. But after 1982, even the next 4 years or so probably would have beaten out the level of returns for the interest saved. So that was the toughest stretch.
Sure. Well, and back then interest rates were not 3.5%.
No, they were not 3.5%. I would have different advice if you're, you know, in the early 80s, and a 30-year mortgage taken out back then was in the teens, the higher teens.
Right. And you were happy to get it. You know, the early 80s, you were happy to get that much higher interest rate. Not that that's fun, but
right. So it's definitely a conversation. Is it? We like to see zero debt, of course.
Right.
But we don't want to necessarily see if it's a longer term debt. The opportunity cost of paying off, that lower percentage, like anything below 4, 5, 6%,
sure,
that's cheap money, historically speaking. And you're likely over a good amount of time, 5-10 years, to beat that level of return if you invest it.
Sure. And we're not saying borrow money to go invest. We're
right.
saying
no.
You have, terrible idea. You have a mortgage, it's long term amortization, you know, it's a low interest rate, then it might make sense to analyze, is it more beneficial to pay extra on the mortgage, or is it more beneficial to look somewhere else, which probably is the next step, right?
So if I'm next
paid
step,
down,
right?
I've paid down large interest debt, short amortization, large interest debt. Now where do I go?
Step five. We want to make sure that we can max the Roth IRA contributions, if eligible. You know, eligible contributions depends on income. Something like
$183,000, I think.
Yeah, phases out in the high 180s to, you know, it's like short, like phases out completely in the high 190s. But between that income range, you might be able to do a partial contribution. Mm-hmm. But if you're below that, definitely strive to hit, and this is modified adjusted gross income. We're called MAGI. And we want to make sure that we get as much money into those Roths as possible, because here's a cool trick, it also doubles as your emergency savings. So most people, some people may not be aware that with Roth contribution dollars, your contributions have already been taxed. So you can pull those dollars out anytime, tax-free, penalty-free. Yeah, so that ability to pull out tax-free, penalty-free of those Roth IRA contributions can double as your emergency savings. Ideally, we like it to be liquid, like the step two would be checking savings, high-interest savings accounts. But the Roth, if you've got a comfortable amount, maybe 3 months or 4 months in the savings account, and now we've got the Roth, we can afford to start taking a little bit more risk with that. I don't like to recommend taking too much risk in the Roth until we've hit the 6 month minimum on our emergency savings from step two. It just doesn't make sense. If we're trying to use that Roth to kind of help out with goal number two, we don't want to go, you know, all
super
out
risky,
right? Because, you know, 6 months of emergency savings in your Roth can quickly become 30% of, you know, it's just, or 3 months worth of emergency savings in,
right,
in a bad stretch.
If you're too aggressive, like what you're saying is it could quickly, you know, be cut in half. So, okay, so I've got my Roth funded, or we've been doing, they've come and seen you and I, and we've done the backdoor Roth, and but we've got the Roth fully funded. Okay. And so now that was step five. So we've got our fully funded Roth. What do we do next?
I would say that there's a little bit of a twist here. One thing that I like to look at is, do you have an ESOP, a stock option purchase plan that allows you to buy your company stock at a 15% discount? Typically, they'll give you something like a 15% discount based on the opening price or the closing price across a 6 month stretch or something like that. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. Different plans have different rules, but you get a 15% discount on the best price of either the beginning or the end. And, you know, you have to be careful there that you're not getting into a cap gain situation. You sell it too soon, those gains count as ordinary income.
Sure.
So if it's a short-term cap gain, so we got to be careful with that. But if you do have an ESOP, Employee Stock Purchase Plan, ESPP, then those can be a nice little, I would say that falls in between five and six.
Okay. So if we've explored those options, we've got the Roth, we may or may not have a stock purchase plan or a stock option plan. So now what do we do?
Next step, if you've checked all the boxes for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and 5B, sixth step would be maxing your 401k. So a lot of people are like, hey, I'm already maxing out my 401k, and then I go back and say, okay, we've hit step one, let's look at your emergency fund. I've got like 5K in my savings account.
Okay.
It's like, well, what's your match? 6%. Let's dial the 401k back to 6%, which will immediately lead to less take-home income, because now that you're, I guess, after-tax income, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you're reducing your 401k deductions, but that increases the taxable income. So your cash flow to your pocket will definitely change there. But if we're reducing our 401k to just hit the match, now we're able to match that number two priority, which is emergency savings.
Okay.
So if you're piling money into the 401k already and you haven't hit those other five steps, probably need to rethink the strategy, because you just need to tweak it a little bit. It's not that savings in your 401k is bad, but just make sure that you're covering those other bases first.
Okay. So they've got those steps done. We've hit those, you know, first five, six steps. We maxed our 401k because we went back and analyzed, okay, we've got emergency savings is done. We've got the match, obviously, because we're maxing the 401k. And if someone is lucky enough to have excess income outside of that, right? So we've got extra dollars. We've got our living expenses. We've paid down our debts. We've got our Roth maximized. Now what do we do?
Step number seven, call Matt and Bo.
That should be step number one.
True. I jest. Step number seven, we need to start thinking about, you know, some of the other more creative ways to invest. Simply would be a brokerage account. You know, it's not a IRA, it's not a Roth, it's not a 401k. It's just plain and simply just like a savings or checking account, except that you can put investments inside it.
Yeah, you can buy stocks or bonds or mutual funds or whatever you're buying. It's an investment account that's taxable, right? Mm-hmm.
Okay. And here's where I really start to look at not just your investment diversification, but your tax diversification.
Sure.
So I'll take a moment and explain that. Tax diversification means we want to try, if at all possible, to have equal buckets of money when you retire, to have money in your taxable bucket, in your tax deferred bucket, in your tax-free bucket. So taxable is this taxable brokerage account where if you have interest or dividends that come in, they're taxed at preferred rates mostly. If you sell an investment for a gain, that's tax favorable. If it's long-term gains, your federal rate is generally 15%. And in Oregon here, we tack on another 9% because it doesn't matter if it's cap gains or earned income. It's still taxed at the income rate. So tack on another 9% generally. So if you make money, you're in Oregon taxed at about 24% rates there, which is... It seems like a lot, but historically, from a tax perspective, that is fairly low. And I'm not hating on any presidential, any presidents or their tax policies in the past, but under Clinton, the cap gains rate was 39.6% alone.
So what you're saying is not 15 to get, is not terrible. Politically, it's just a low tax rate historically. Right.
Yeah, we're 15% federally is fairly on the low side. So that's tax favorable. And if you don't sell it, you know, you're not taking any gains. It's only when you sell and realize those gains that you pay the taxes. And you're only paying taxes on the gains, not the whole amount.
Sure.
So that's bucket number one. Bucket number two is tax deferred, like your 401k, your traditional IRA. Now we're talking about every dollar that we pull out is taxed as earned income no matter what. So we don't want to push ourselves into a higher tax bracket. What if we have a need to buy an RV or we want to... I have clients. They had needs.
Right.
The needs were the RVs.
Yeah,
I had three in 1 year. It was interesting. But you know, we don't want to necessarily push ourselves into a high tax bracket if we have an unfortunate spending need or need a new roof, whatever the spending need may be. So we want to have the third bucket, the tax-free bucket, meaning right now, if you're a joint tax filer, you can make a slight amount more than $80,000 and your federal tax rate is no higher than 12%. So above... the 12%. Let's say we wanted to make $81,000. The next $1,000 or so is taxed at the next higher tax bracket, which is 22%.
Right.
But if we pull the $1,000 out of the Roth, no taxes
at all. Yeah.
No taxes.
So it just gives you levers to pull. So we want to make sure you're filling up those buckets. And there are other strategies that we might use. We don't need to go into them because you know today necessarily run out of time in the segment, but. The idea is once you get to that point where you've followed Matt's steps 1 through 6, we've got our 401k match, we've gotten our high interest debt paid down, we've gotten our protection plan in place,
we've got the emergency fund
set up, we've got a Roth fully funded, right? We've got that bucket, we're maxing out that 401k or that IRA if you don't have a 401k at work, now we've got those things all finished. Now we get into the we call it the fun stuff, right? Now we're into the interesting, fun, different ways to look at maximizing those buckets. And that's really where you want to call. That's why you made a sort of tongue-in-cheek joke about call Matt and Bo. But if you're at that point and you're looking for those alternative strategies, we're happy to talk you through them. And if it makes sense to work with us on them, we'd be happy to do that. If it makes sense for you to do it on your own, we're happy to get that information out there. So
and we'll share a little bit more about that on the next segment.
Yeah, for sure. So we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be back with more Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com. 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. You know, as we close out this show today, we've spent a lot of time talking about, priorities of investing. We've gone really in detail about the ins and outs of it. But I know, Matt, that, people have asked, and they'd like to hear you know, situations that we've employed these, you know, priorities, you know, we can talk about the most fun one, I think, is the best way to start, right? Is that once you have those excess dollars, you've taken care of those basic steps that we talked about, right? And now we need, we've got these extra dollars. We're, you know, we're looking to save them. You know, folks are, you know, are looking for interesting ways to save more for retirement once they've taken on these, you know, taken on these, all these other avenues and they've maxed them out. So, can you talk about maybe some examples where you've used these things for clients specifically?
Sure. So in this example that I'm thinking of, the clients came into a little bit of a windfall of funds, which is always nice.
Yeah.
And as advisors, you know, we put our hats on to really try and look as far out as we can to cover as many speed bumps and hurdles to make sure that these things don't snag our clients down the road. So in this example, came into a little bit of a windfall. It was about $50,000. We were able to use a single premium immediate annuity. I know we've talked about that on prior shows, but we dropped the amount into a SPIA, the single premium immediate annuity, which then over the next 10 years kicked out a payout that put in money to a whole life insurance policy, a cash value building life insurance policy. And then for that, we're able to grow that money on a conservative basis. It's not necessarily stocks or bonds. It has guaranteed interest, which is albeit low, but the non-guaranteed interest rates are fairly decent, and it has a life insurance component to it. We can borrow from the cash value bucket down the road. So it's really a tax-efficient vehicle, and it covers a lot of purposes.
So those purposes, you know, if I recall correctly, too, the SPIA rate was something like 3% at that time, which, you know, now people are loving 3%, right, which we can't even get anymore. So on a 3%, we can guarantee 3%. It pays for that insurance policy. So what I'm hearing is a client has – so when we hear these situations, the client now has life insurance to cover the life – you know, she's young and healthy, so we've got life insurance in case something happens.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a cash bucket that we can use later on in life for tax, you know, for the, we're filling up those buckets you were talking about for tax diversification, right?
Right. Within certain guidelines, we have definite guidelines we want to stick within when we're using and accessing that cash value to make sure it doesn't become a tax consequence. But there's a very usable bucket of cash there if we need to. And then the interest, to my understanding, goes back to our own pockets if we're if we borrow from our policy.
Not our pockets, but the policy owner's pockets.
Correct.
Yeah, if you borrow from the policy, yeah, similar to the interest in when you borrow from a 401k, you're paying yourself back interest. The other thing about it is, you know, if the question comes up a lot, you know, what's the plan for a long-term care event, right? So she has now has, you know, guaranteed 3% on a small, you know, a small amount of money. It's not a ton of money, but it bought a nice big amount of insurance to cover her family if something happens to her. She doesn't have to worry about it. Once she hits retirement, maybe we pull some of that money, like you said, tax efficiently borrowing it. And she's also covered in case there's a long-term care event happening. So that's when people hear me talk about that, you know, permanent life insurance being fun, that's the fun part about it. The talking about dying is not fun.
No.
Because insurance, you know, folks, and I've said this a lot, and I will reference it again, insurance is not an investment. It's protection. But if we can utilize it to help fill in those other gaps and get some sort of return on it along the way. You mentioned, you know, Matt, you mentioned earlier, you know, if we're looking at historical investment rates and we were talking about 3% on a, you know, on a mortgage, that's not exciting because we should be able to beat that over 30 years. So if you had taken that same money that went into the permanent insurance policy and invested it in the market, you probably will have more money in there in cash, almost definitely. Not, you know, not definitely, there's no guarantees, but probably will have more money.
Historically speaking.
Yeah, in that investment account. But what you didn't have was protection for your family over those 20 years, and you didn't have the ability to borrow from it in a tax-efficient manner. You would have had to pay taxes on that growth in that investment account. So it can be really interesting and really fun to utilize those things.
Oh, absolutely. It builds the foundation, and then you can get those other types of growth aspects from your, you know, the 401ks, the Roths, the brokerage accounts. So it just provides that nice stability for a portfolio, for a household.
Right. Because it's not an investment. It's a tool in your toolbox to use to cover. And if it can work multiple ways, the thing I say all the time, when you put money at the bank and you put it in a savings account, they are borrowing your money, right? And they're paying you an interest rate, but they're out. The bank is making money three, four different ways on that money, as opposed to you're just
car
making
loans,
interest.
Home loans,
mm-hmm. and they're investing
I don't know
it
if they're
too.
Making money on home loans right now. That's a tough one. That's
yeah, they really don't make a lot of money, but they make some, right? Because mm-hmm. they don't have to pay to borrow very much to borrow that money, right? What are we getting on an interest rate on a 5-year CD right now? It's terrible.
Yeah, it's not good.
But so they're making money three ways. So shouldn't your money be working multiple ways too, right? That's the way that we look at it. And so if you have that situation, and I don't want to put it out there only if you have a windfall, right? But if you're looking at ways to cover your family, at ways to figure out how to spend those extra dollars, if you would like to have Matt or myself or a member of our team go through these priority of investing steps, make sure that you're on the right track. Give us a call, 503-253-3000, or shoot us an email at askbo@pfgwm.com. We're happy to sit down with you, go over what we see, how we see things, and tell you what we think about what you've done so far. I can't tell you, Matt. I know you've been in that situation. People come in and they expect a sales pitch from us, and you say, hey, no, you've done great. You're looking great. And that's the best feeling for us as advisors.
Yeah.
Right? So is to sit down and say, no, you've done a great job. I wouldn't change a thing. You're really on track, right? And we'd love to work with you if it makes sense for you, but we also would just love to give you that peace of mind.
And definitely I've seen a few cases like that. I think of one real quick example where they were just completely dialed in. It's just that they had money at like 12 different places, and now we just kind of can bring in some simplicity to their lives.
So right. Simplify the thing. Yeah. So yeah, that, they were able to consolidate because that was their issue. It wasn't how they invested. It wasn't how they had
checked all
the
boxes. The numbers looked really great. They're way ahead of schedule. They've got the protection pieces in place. We're trying to throw rocks at somebody's glass house to see where we can break something just to make sure that everything is covered. They're protected from all angles. And in this case, they just had, so many cats that they were trying to herd. It's like, hey, why do you have 6 different qualified accounts? We could just put that down into like 2, maybe 1.
Yeah, just make it easier.
Just simplify.
Simplify. That's why the show is called Investing Simplified. Right. Perfect. So we were going to, I think that's a good place to leave it, for this week. We will be back next week. Like I said, Taylor Cattell will be back on the show with us. Kevin Stege, I'm hopeful he's at least planning on being the show for right now. So if you have a question for Taylor or for Kevin, send that in to askbo@pfgwm.com, as well as your questions for Matt, for myself. We are happy to cover those. We're happy to get that info out to you. We really appreciate you joining us today. Be safe out there. God bless you all. You've been listening to Investing Simplified.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified at gwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000, or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.